committee, and in the absence of our chair and vice chair, we have we're taking. I'm in charge. While the chair is out of town, they asked me to go ahead and get started on this. And we have before us today five bills, all of which are the being shepherded by the low-income housing work group. And my sense is that we are probably going to have a substantial crossover in testimony on those things. So let me do this. Let me open a hearing on all five bills, and then I'll ask Representative Merkley to give a brief overview, and we'll go down the witness list, starting just in no particular order on the bills. We have floor at 10:30 this morning, so I would ask that you please try to limit your comments to not more, it looks like, in about 3 minutes each, and that way we'll have a chance for everybody to testify. I know some of you have come in from more than 100 miles, so I want to make sure, and others of you have come in from far enough away that you still don't want to have to come back and do this again. So we'll do it that way, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3600, House Bill 3211, House Bill 2019, House Bill 2087, and House Bill 3207. Do you want to give us any staff overview, or should we go right to Representative Merkley?
We have both Ed and Elizabeth have done some of the staff work on each of those. Maybe some are income tax related, some are property tax related. So probably would be best to go ahead and go right to the public this one.
Very good. Representative Murphy, do you want to give us a...
Yes, thank you, Representative Lee. I have passed out the proposed housing agenda. I think there are also copies available for the public that list the five bills that we're looking at today. The working group did meet several times, and it consisted of Representative Shetterly, Representative Williams, Representative Kafori, and myself. We felt that these bills merited further discussion by the committee, and so have brought them back to have that discussion. Affordable housing is a huge challenge in our state. It's become more so over the last 10 years as housing prices have gone up dramatically. The state has traditionally been relatively uninvolved in housing policy, but became more involved as the price has risen. In 1991, we had the initiation of the Housing Trust Fund, and as you all know, there was a major effort this year to try to expand that fund by adding $160 million to it. That may be a very difficult proposition, and we feel that these proposals, although not in lieu of that, may be tools that advance the state's ability to address the issue of affordable housing in the state. The House Bill 3600, Individual Development Account Bill, is in many ways a radical proposition. It addresses the issue of an equity strategy in dealing with poor families rather than an income strategy. It's the difference, if you will, between providing a monthly subsidy for rent and providing low-income families with a challenge grant for radically altering their position, their financial position through homeownership, education, or starting a business. And I'll be very brief so that we can get directly to testimony. Our second proposal is for a $5 fee. It would mirror the $10 fee that we passed to this committee earlier this year to make it as simple as possible for counties to collect it and forward it. That $5 fee sounds, document fee sounds like a very modest fee, but interestingly enough, if one looks at the $160 million proposal for the trust fund, and if that trust fund was to earn 7%, it would raise about $11.2 million a year. This fee would raise about $11.2 million per biennium, or roughly half, if you will, of the amount the trust fund would raise. So it is a significant possibility or an opportunity. The bill does dedicate 10% of the funds to homeownership and channels all the money through the Department of Housing and Community Services. The third proposal is an expanded property tax exemption that I think Representative Kafori will want to speak to further that would enable the state to respond in part to the challenge of expiring youth housing, which is particularly a challenge in several of our metropolitan areas. And the final two are sunset extensions that I suspect will be relatively non-controversial. And with that, I'll stop and look forward to hearing testimony from the public. Thank you.
Okay. I just have this intuitive sense that Representative Kafori doesn't need to speak on the bill. I would rather hear the testimony. So let's proceed with that. Some of you, it appears, may have signed up for more than one bill. We are in public hearing on all the bills, so when you're up, go ahead and speak to whichever of the bills you have signed up for. But again, we appreciate some time limit here, so we make sure we get through all the witnesses. Let me first call up Raleigh Wisbrock. Thank you. And I want to know, you're the one whose name I saw when I was looking on the list here to check off, do you live more than 100 miles from Salem? Do you really live more than 100 miles from Salem? You work for the treasurer.
Mr. Chair, that's because when I signed up for the bill, you two will get old. And
you have a long commute.
No, I'm just old. Can't read. Met with Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Raleigh Wisbrock. I'm Chief of Staff of the Oregon Treasury, and I'm here on behalf of Treasurer Jim Hill in support of House Bill 3600. The Treasurer 4 years ago conducted a task force with the support of the legislature to look at savings and investment issues in the state of Oregon, and found that Oregon faces the same kind of problem that the rest of the United States faces, and perhaps even more so. And this country is sorely ill-prepared for a long-term economic future. People are not prepared for their retirement. They're not prepared to take responsibility for their older those older years. And I'm getting there. And I said Oregon is perhaps less prepared than the rest of the nation. Let me tell you why. We have a very low rate. I think other people can speak more clearly to of house ownership, owning a home, which is the most important piece of equity that a person can have, most people have in their lives. But a part of what concerns the treasurer is the attitude that Oregonians have about themselves. I think we think of ourselves as being fiscally conservative, from pioneer stock, that's responsible, taking responsibility for our lives and for our future and for developing a very positive future for our progeny. In fact, Oregon has the fourth highest rate in the United States of non-mortgage debt. We have our credit cards leveraged to the hilt. We are leveraged to the hilt, and we don't think of ourselves in that way. I think, and this intent to disparage California to the South, but I think if we would think who would be in that top quartile or that top group of debt, you know, just mortgage to your teeth, and that's not for your house, that's for your television, that's for your car, that's for everything, you were just leveraged to teeth, it would be California, about 24th or 25th. I think we delude ourselves into thinking that we're more fiscally responsible than we are, and it's a deep concern. We have one of the lowest rates of savings. This country has one of the lowest rates of savings of any industrial nation in the world, and that's of concern. Because it's that capital that's invested to grow this nation, it's the savings that people have that goes out in terms of loans, you know, to build infrastructure. It goes out in terms of loans to build housing, and it's very important for growing the economic health of this country. The research that we've done shows that 7 out of 10 Oregonians don't have a clue about what their economic future holds, about how they're going to prepare for savings and their retirement and for that long-term future. They have never thought about it. And if you haven't thought about it, they've done nothing to prepare. We looked at individual development accounts as one of the resources to help Oregonians prepare for that future. Home ownership, you know, being able to invest in a business and education is just critical to the long-term economic health of this region and to the state. And we strongly support the concept of anything that can be done to expand it. The Treasurer's found that in the business we conduct, you know, nationally, that there's a great deal of interest on Wall Street to help participate in programs like individual development accounts, that we think that if we provide this kind of resource, that there'll be support, investment support that goes along with it, that's hand in hand with it. And I just wanted to get on record for the Treasury. We think it's a great idea. It helps people to prepare for their long-term future. It's a wonderful idea to get people into homes. That builds a sense of security community that we all, I think, support. Any questions? And I'll get out of your way.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Let me bring up our next panel while the Vice Chair gets her stuff oriented here. Okay. Let's bring up Ms. Ingram and John Chandler. John, do you want to come on up? And Richard Meyer. Richard Meyer? I'm sorry.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Director of Governmental Affairs of the Oregon Building Industry Association, here on the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3207 and 3600. We're very pleased that this committee is taking a look at the affordable housing issue. I don't know, I've made this speech in so many committees this session, I'm not sure if I've made it to this one. If I have, you'll please forgive me for repeating it. There's been a real source of concern for our industry that the legislature has not focused on affordable housing and trying to make home ownership a reality for Oregonians. We have some of the highest housing prices in the country, in the state, and our home ownership rate is the fifth worst in the country. And we believe that there's no particular reason for either of those things to occur, and both of them are eminently within our ability to correct, particularly with regard to home ownership programs that help people get into their own home, get out of rental stock, into their own property, are scarce in Oregon, and we believe that there are things the government can do that will make a huge impact on home ownership. These two bills that you have in front of you, the Dash 1s, the 3207 and 3600, both help in that regard. I just presented a copy of the amendments to 3207 this morning, but I haven't had a chance to analyze them completely, but we certainly support the concept and the idea of going forward with affordable housing assistance in a way that isn't particularly damaging to the economy or to the industry. Thank you for your time. We'll take any questions you might have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Who else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jenna Ingram with the Oregon Association of Realtors. I do appreciate you letting me testify a little bit earlier. To avoid getting in the same shape as Wally, I have an eye appointment at 10 o'clock. The Oregon Association of Realtors does support funding for affordable housing. Representative Merkley did visit with me regarding the recording fee, and while the association has not reviewed the proposed legislation, we are very, very supportive of any mechanism, nearly any mechanism that would provide, I gotta watch what I say. Any mechanism that would provide the money for affordable housing. On a cautionary note, I guess we would like to see something set up so that the program could be reviewed maybe by next session or 5 years or whatever the committee deems appropriate, so that we could see that the money is being used to actually generate affordable housing, and that it's being used to that it's being used as efficiently as possible. So there might be some room for fine tuning. As I indicated to Representative Merkley, the Oregon Association of Realtors probably will not be the prime opponent or any opponent on this bill or this proposal. I have, however, heard comments from other members of the business community who feel that the original recording fee of $11 was too high. However, the Oregon Association of Realtors would not oppose, at least to my knowledge at this point, any addition to that will be dedicated for affordable housing. And if there are questions, I'd be happy to answer those now.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Richard Meyer, Director of the Association of Oregon Community Development Organizations. Glad to be here with my partners in community development. Representing the not-for-profit organizations, 60 of them across the state, from Community Partners for Affordable Housing and Polk CDC to Rogue Valley CDC and Community Connections in LeGrand, we're all over the state. Community development corporations are, of course, in support of this whole package. It's a constructive, sensible approach by Representative Merkley. The IDA proposal particularly is one of those proposals that is give a person a fishing pole and teach them to fish kind of proposal. Saving is good for families and communities alike. So these each of these proposals is a part of a package that will help us address the affordable housing problem in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Are there any questions for these witnesses? Thank you very much. We call up the next panel, Susan Lee.
Good morning, Chair Strobeck, members of the committee. My name is Susan Lee. I'm employed with Multnomah County, and I'm here testifying on behalf of Multnomah County Chair Beverly Stein. Chair Stein applauds your efforts to address affordable housing issues in the state and improve the quality of life for all Oregonians. Specifically, Chair Stein supports House Bill 3600, which would establish individual development accounts for use by lower income and the working poor in Oregon to provide a mechanism to save for advanced education, home ownership, and small business capital. She believes that by providing this infrastructure, we can improve the quality of life for all Oregonians. Multnomah County has been working on a pilot project with Human Solutions, who is here to testify, and I believe that they'll be addressing the experience of that program. And we found in Multnomah County that by providing a means for people to save for this, even the poorest of poor have participated in the program. And so she encourages you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Tracy Strickland-Lito.
Good morning. I'm here to testify on House Bill 3600. I'm Tracy Strickland-Lito, and I have Mara Winstar with me. I do have some written testimony to submit as well. I'm here to testify about House Bill 3600, which is an individual development account program or match savings program. I've been the coordinator of the IDA program at Human Solutions since February of 97. I carried the program through final design phase and implementation, and I currently administer the program. As many of you know, Human Solutions has been serving low-income families in East Multnomah County for 10 years now, so we feel like we have a pretty good idea of what it takes to move people from homelessness to stability and housing and out of poverty. If you stop to think about it, the main difference between low-income people and people who aren't low-income is money, and we're talking about both cash and assets here. So if you think about a typical family that's facing a crisis, maybe like an illness or an accident, a loss of a job, a family that has assets, a financial safety net, will be in a better position to actually address that crisis. But when you think about a family that doesn't have money, savings, or assets, that family has fewer options for addressing the crisis, and that family will be less resilient. Our society has a variety of ways in which they help people who have assets keep or increase those assets. Some examples are the homeowners can deduct their mortgage interest, or people who have assets can use those assets as collateral to get more money, to make more money. However, our society generally works against those people who don't have any money and are trying to build assets. And some examples are public assistance programs that penalize poor people for saving and having assets. And these are just the kinds of things that people need to move on to long-term financial stability. An IDA is a valuable creative tool in which to address this inequity. The matching funds that IDA holders receive help them build savings to invest in high-return assets like a home, a small business, or education or job training. In addition, IDA holders get education and training regarding money management. And that's something that's available to people who have lots of money. Those are called financial planners, but those aren't out there for folks who don't have tons of money. So recognizing the need for low-income families to be able to build assets, Human Solutions began planning their IDA program over 3 years ago. We implemented in October 97. We were honored to be selected to participate in a national demonstration of individual development account programs. We were one of 13 sites nationally, and that linked us with sort of the national IDA movement. And we're sort of connected with best practices in the field. And currently, we're already starting to see results. We've got 73 participants. In total, they've saved 16,500 of their own. They've earned about 1,300 in matching. And the difference in ratio there, we match people one-to-one, shows that some folks are saving beyond the limit in which we match people. So that's a good sign. We've already had one participant make a withdrawal so that he could receive some training for his small business. So we're seeing progress here. In addition, we're trying to expand our IDA program. Currently, we're working with the Enterprise Foundation to try to expand our program countywide so more people have opportunities in Multnomah County. And we're also working with the Enterprise Foundation to try to offer technical assistance and training throughout the state so other organizations can benefit from our learning when they start their programs. So overall, at Human Solutions, we really think that IDAs hold great promise. And there's a lot of other folks out in the country that feel the same way, and I think this is illustrated by the fact that in the fall of this year, the Assets for Independence Act was passed as federal policy, and it's resulted in some federal funding that's available to do another kind of demonstration or pilot. And in addition, some other states have passed IDA legislation and are actually providing state funding, such as Pennsylvania, Indiana, and North Carolina. So what I'd urge Oregon representatives to do is to follow suit with House Bill 3600 and allow more Oregonians to have the opportunity to build assets and become more financially stable. Thank you.
Thank you. Winstar?
I'm Mara Winstar, and I currently have an individual development account. An IDA offers a lot more than a future for families and children. IDAs are one of the few inclusive programs available. By inclusive, I mean that you don't have to have children to participate. I'm a single person on disability. Because of my disabilities, I've been unable to work outside my home. I have been in the system for a long time. It's primarily by the support offered through my IDA that I had enough hope, along with a plan to establish future assets, that I've started a home-based greeting card business. Many people believe that poverty is only a lack of financial education. Myself, along with countless others, are not necessarily financially illiterate. What many of us are is stuck in hopelessness. Saving a few dollars a month feels worthless, taking decades to save anything worth making a difference in our lives. What IDAs offer those of us in this particular situation is the experience of saving on a monthly basis, knowing that even saving $20 per month could actually yield making a difference in our futures. Without the experience, the knowledge alone will not make the difference. This is the first program I've been involved in that not only offers both knowledge and experience, it offers a matching dollar amount that allows the small amount able to be saved to be doubled. The genius in this is the message it sends. If you're willing to save for your future, others are willing to help. No one will ever know all the benefits to come to the state and Oregonians until more people are able to participate in IDAs. Children, families, individuals, thousands of people's lives could be reinvented and be a part of contributing to Oregon. I'm one individual with an IDA who has created a business that contributes to organizations supporting children and families. My one small business is touching many lives. One child experiencing a stable home of their own may grow up to create many homes for others. One parent able to further their education through an IDA may encourage many others to have hope and work towards achieving their goals. This bill will do a lot more than allow Oregonians with low incomes to save money. I believe it has the potential to put hope back into many hopeless lives, allowing people to not only learn how to succeed, but to also to experience successes they never believed they could achieve. This isn't only about giving to people. It's about helping them help themselves. And this, as a choice rather than a mandate, will change many lives. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Richard Hayden. Okay, Roberto Franco.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My name is Roberto Franco, and I'm the Executive Director for the Upon Worker Housing Development Corporation in Woodburn. We provide affordable housing to farm workers. We now own and manage 104 rental apartments. And I'm here to support House Bill 3600, the IDA program. And why we want to support it, we have three main reasons for it. We like through that program help and provide mechanisms for farm workers to improve their lives by building assets. As we know, farm workers make an average of $12,000 to $15,000 a year, and with that, if we can see it as hardly enough to save some money to put aside for buy housing. We would also like to see that farm workers can have other opportunities than farm work, that they can find other alternatives to sustain their lives, either by opening their small business or by also furthering education for the children. And finally, we like to support the IDA program because we like to see the families to be able to save and move on into home ownership. We like them to move from rental housing into home ownership. As it is now, we only have 104 units, but we have about 200 applicants on a waiting list. And by moving renters or the residents from rental into home ownership, we can provide opportunities for other folks to come into affordable housing and have the same opportunity as well. We have had in the last 2 years a home ownership program with counseling and assistance with down payment and closing costs. And the IDA program will just further strengthen that program that we have. And in the last 2 years, we have helped 15 families to move into home ownership, and half of those are from our housing complexes. And again, so I like to support them on behalf of my organization, House Bill 3600.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Franco. Any questions? Thanks. Next on the list, Richard Weinman.
Thank you, Chairman Strobeck. I'm Richard Weinman from the City of Eugene. And I'd like to comment about two different bills, actually three different bills if I can. The first one is House Bill 2090, and this one has to deal with the low-income housing property tax exemption. I'm not going to read you my testimony, I've passed it out, but what I'm going to say is this is a bill that allows local governments to have a choice. And over the last, since 1978, the City of Eugene has participated in two different housing property tax exemption programs. This low-income exemption, for which we provided six different exemptions for projects relating from 10 to 60 units, and another exemption for the multi-unit property tax exemption, which is not necessarily low-income, but it's the one Representative McCurry's bill relates to. The issue around low-income housing is pretty basic, that in order to serve the 10,000 households in the Eugene-Springfield area that are low-income and can't afford market rents, we need to do some extraordinary things to try to provide some subsidized housing. And without a property tax exemption, the rent goes up about $100, which is a significant amount of money for a very low-income household. And we're trying to achieve rents that are under $300 because that's what's affordable to a mom with kids who's making minimum wage or on welfare. And we're trying to get them out of that cycle of poverty. And so we're trying to throw everything we can as a local government into that mix. And we have had support from the school district to do that, and they have signed on to that property tax exemption already, and they're willing to continue to support it, I believe. The other big piece about that tax exemption is that it helps to level our playing field. We have several different organizations in Eugene area that provide subsidized housing. One of them is the Housing Authority, which gets an automatic property tax exemption for its properties, and the others are St. Vincent de Paul and Metropolitan Affordable Housing. Without this property tax exemption, the playing field isn't really level for them. And so we have found that we have gotten better developments by having competition between those developers. They have worked hard to try to get our subsidies and the state subsidies. And because of that, our developments have been better, and they've been better for the tenants that are living there. And I think they've been coming in at a better price. But this would really tip the scale toward the Housing Authority's projects. Not to say they aren't a great developer, they are. But this provides that balance. That's so important. In the essence of time, I'm going to not try to read this testimony. Yeah. I hope that you'll take a good look.
We do have a written copy of it, and thank you for providing that.
The other comment I'd like to make is about 3211. Can I talk about it now?
Sure.
Which is, it's the same kind of concept. This is about local control. The City of Eugene has adopted the provisions of this multi-unit property tax exemption, and over the years, since 1978, we've allocated, we've approved them for 17 different projects. Some of them are back in the tax rolls already. Now, we currently have a moratorium on accepting applications because we're not, the city council is not sure whether they want to continue this program or not. But they're very clear they want the opportunity to do so. And without some incentives, it's almost impossible to get housing built, multifamily housing built in the core area. We have goals about compact urban growth. It makes a lot of sense to try to get housing in the downtown area or, in our case, in the university area. But without some incentives, it's not going to happen because parking, quite frankly, is a higher and better use for the property, you know, and you can build much cheaper on the so-called greenfield properties. We just really want that opportunity. If you approve this, it doesn't say that there's going to be a property tax exemption granted. Far from it. It simply gives the local government the opportunity to adopt the provisions, and then each and every tax exemption is approved on a case-by-case basis. That's true for both of these exemptions. So all we're asking is for the opportunity as a local government to consider these incentives if we want to. And the last thing I want to do is just clarify that the sheets that are passed out here, they have some misinformation on them, and I'm not sure where it came from, but it says in here that there were 23 different property tax exemptions approved in Eugene. It says that for both of the different bills. In fact, I administer those programs. I can only count up 17 since 1978, and of which 6 of them are the low-income one and 17 of them are the multifamily one, the multi-unit one. So,
maybe what you can do is forward that information to the Legislative Revenue Office that prepares those, and they can correct that in the next edition.
I will do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weinman.
Sure.
Mike Saba and Mark Landauer.
Good morning, Chair Strobeck. My name is Mike Saba. I'm a city planner for the City of Portland. Mark, did you want to preface this at all?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mark Landauer with the City of Portland's Office of Government Relations. I want to thank you for holding a hearing on 3211 today. The City of Portland is very supportive of this measure, and Mike here is here to explain in further detail the reasoning behind that. Thank you.
You have written testimony, too, so what I'll try to do is just highlight the points we're trying to make. And actually, our predecessor from the City of Eugene actually made a lot of our points, too. Both the City of Eugene and City of Portland have been active users of the statutes that allow local communities to provide tax exemptions on a limited basis for various kinds of housing activity. The City of Portland also has been very aggressive in using this tool, both for the core area, for transit-oriented development, for low-income housing held by nonprofit corporations, for single-family housing built in distressed areas. So we are familiar with this program. We found it highly successful, and we would urge that you pass on House Bill 3211 for the full House consideration. 3211 essentially adds some minor modifications to the basic statute that has been in effect since 1975 that allows local communities to provide limited property tax exemptions for various kinds of housing activity. Currently, the statute allows it for multi-unit housing, both rental and owner in downtown areas, as well as multiple-unit housing in transit supportive areas, thanks to some amendments that were passed by the 95 legislature. These amendments essentially would direct the statute to promote preservation of publicly subsidized low-income rental housing, and that's what these amendments do. And we think it does it fairly cleanly in that it allows the local community to target this type of exemption and take advantage, actually, of a phrase that already exists in the statute, which is allowing the exemption to extend for the term of a low-income housing assistance contract between a property owner and an agency or subdivision of the state or of the United States. And the reason we're bringing this to you this session is that, as you probably know, the City of Portland has experienced some concern about the issues of expiring Section 8 subsidies.
You've heard about that.
Yes, I suspect you have. The option allowed by HUD for property owners to prepay on Section 8 project-based assistance, as well as, as well as simply other kinds of subsidies that are simply running out. The City of Portland, in adopting the Housing Preservation Program, which you've heard about, also adopted a policy of encouraging long-term affordability for publicly subsidized housing to try to deal with this issue. of the time running out after 20 years or 15 years or 10 years. So what this amendment really does is allow the city or other cities to use the limited property tax exemption as an incentive to keep these properties in the contracts, to keep them as affordable housing under the terms of the original contract. That's essentially what it does. What it doesn't do is it does not modify any other of the restrictions that apply in the statute for the original legislative purposes of poor area housing or transit supportive housing, nor does it modify any of the requirements for a local government to adopt the program, to hold public hearings, to adopt findings justifying the program, and to review these projects on a case-by-case basis. So I think what these amendments do in a fairly clean fashion is allow a broadened legislative purpose for the statute in keeping with the crisis we are facing with expiring subsidies, but keeps intact provisions for local control and the controls that are actually included in the statute that require serious consideration on the part of a locality before these programs are adopted, and a requirement for clear approval of criteria when we determine whether these projects should get this exemption on a case-by-case basis. And that's pretty much what I have to say, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer those.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Martin Cabell?
Chairman Strobeck and members of the committee, I'll be brief, which is a quality I expect of you here. My name is Norton Cabell. I'm a landlord in Eugene, private landlord in Eugene. I'm also president of the Oregon Rental Housing Association, a statewide consortium of landlord trade groups around the state that have about 3,500 members total. Private landlords do see a role for government to play in providing affordable housing opportunities to those segments of our population most in need. So I'm here to encourage you to vote in favor of House Bill 3211. Government-sponsored housing initiatives needn't be viewed as competing with the private sector. The affordable housing projects this bill will enable local jurisdictions at their own discretion to support will complement private housing efforts. Let's be honest. The private market cannot or won't provide housing for all segments of our population. Government and nonprofits must and do play a critical role. I'm pleased to say that our board of directors voted last week unanimously to request you all to support House Bill 3211.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bell. Nice to hear that. Apple. Okay, moving on to the next bill. These are folks who signed up for 2090, but all of these are open. Lynn Schessler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Responding to the House Bill 2090, I think you've already heard testimony of the importance of that particular bill to the local government. Within the bill, it does provide an extension. I want to reemphasize what's already been stated, that it is a local option for property tax exemption. And as we also heard, results in the reduction of rental rates up to $100 a month per unit. And I think that's an important factor and an important tool for local government, local sponsors, as they try to provide affordable housing. I do have comments on some of the other bills maintaining brevity here. House Bill 2087 is another that I've signed up to testify on. That's the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit. There are two key points in that bill that I want to make sure you're aware of. One is that it does extend the current sunset. It extends it for an additional 10 years so that program can retain its longevity. The second aspect of the bill, however, is probably more important to you. It does increase the amount of tax credits from $4 million currently to $5 million. That's the tax credit amount. What that translates to in terms of the loans that lenders can provide for affordable housing, that raises the threshold from $100 million in loans to $125 million in loans. That's a critical component to a lot of affordable housing development. What it results in is the opportunity for a lender to reduce the interest rate on a loan up to 4%. And what that translates to in that interest rate reduction is a savings of $60 to $80, depending on the finance of the project, $60 to $80 per month per apartment in rental reduction. I think you'll find that that's a well-respected and desired program in the state as well. By the end of this biennium, we'll have over 6,000 units around the state that do benefit from this particular tax credit. Responding to just some of the other bills that I've mentioned this morning, House Bill 3207, one clarifying point that for the department we'd like to see is it clearly identifies where the money goes, and there is 10% of the money is identified for the providing home ownership opportunities. It's not clear where the balance of that money and its use goes. So if that anticipated balance of the funding is consistent with the Oregon Housing Fund, which is a trust fund, I think it's worthy of clarification in the bill as to how that fund would be used. And as a final comment, I would just say that the IDA program certainly complements both this affordable housing home ownership opportunity that's referenced in 3207. As we do have a few home ownership programs in our department, the ability to for an IDA to match funds that we have and make home ownership more feasible for families at 60% to 70% of median income is very important to us, and again, a critical piece of funding.
Okay. Thank you for your comments and suggested amendments. Did you have a question? Mr. Chairman, Senator Merkley?
Yes, thank you for the comment on the fact that 90% of the funds are not earmarked. That was done deliberately, recognizing that the department's in a position to make judgments about which programs serve the public best. I'm sure there are many who would like to earmark the entire 100%, but many people spoke to me about the importance of trying not to do that. If I reframe the question as, do you like the idea of having the money unearmarked so that the department can exercise its judgment, or would you prefer to have it all earmarked?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berkeley, I think it's worth defining that it is flexible or it is earmarked.
Okay.
We find it unaddressed, which leads to challenge.
Okay. We'd be happy to clarify that.
Then you have to get back into legislative intent, and that gets really confusing.
That implies there is intent.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Hayden? Richard Hayden, are you in the room now? Still out of the room? Okay, we'll go on to Will White.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm William White. I'm the executive director of the Housing Development Center. We develop affordable housing in the state of Oregon, and as that is our primary mission, I'm well aware that there are in excess of 120,000 households in the state of Oregon in need of affordable housing, and I'm sure you know enough. I wish I had this on a larger chart, but you've seen the trend with housing prices over the past decade rising steeply while real, adjusted for inflation, personal income has remained flat. And that is the reason that even though affordable housing was a significant problem 5 or 10 years ago, it is a much more pressing demand now. There are some 60 organizations statewide working to develop affordable housing. We work with many of these groups. And there are not enough resources for these groups to meet their missions. We have constantly been receiving requests from groups around the state to help them increase their capacity to develop affordable housing. In the last 3 months alone, we've had requests from Corvallis, Baker City, Tigard, Beaverton, Salem, and the City of Portland. That's just in the last 3 months, and it seems to be a clearly increasing demand for assistance in getting this affordable housing developed. As a result of this, without going into the details of the bills you are looking at, I just want to give you a user's perspective very briefly on these. 3207, the filing fee for county documents that could raise $11 million in the biennium, would be the first significant increase in state funds in some time to work with this problem. I'm particularly glad to see that there's a 10% amount set aside for home ownership, because this is dedicated to getting people currently in publicly subsidized housing into their own housing, realizing that American dream, but by doing so also at a much lower cost than developing new units, freeing up units for those who need affordable rental housing. 3600, the IDA bill, takes the large creative step of looking at supporting people's income in a different way. Instead of each year providing little income supplements, it's trying to build the assets of low-income families, which is how all the many middle-income families in our country have gotten to where they've gotten, and it's giving low-income families a chance to do that and to have a partner in doing that. I think we heard some eloquent testimony earlier from one individual representative of those who have benefited from this program. 3211, the property tax abatement, which would allow local jurisdictions who wish to do so to encourage the owners of federally subsidized housing to maintain that housing and stay in that valuable program, is a much needed tool for the jurisdictions to have in their toolbox. And finally, the state tax credit that Lynn Scheffler just referred to, as a person that works on a daily basis with this tool as one of our important tools, the fact that we can utilize funds from private lenders, that we can get the banks involved in affordable housing and use this tool to lower the interest rate on that private lending, is an essential way that we have to leverage public dollars by making the best use of private capital and developing affordable housing. So I see all of these bills as important interrelated parts of the broad public policy we need in place here at the state level in order to address this problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Martha McLennan.
Good morning. I'm Martha McLennan. I'm with the City of Portland's Bureau of Housing and Community Development. I'm the Housing Program Manager there. You've already heard testimony from Portland on House Bill 3211. I wanted to speak more broadly to the full array of bills that you have before you this morning. I won't take much time speaking about the need for affordable housing. You've heard lots of testimony here, and I'm sure you're hearing testimony in lots of different venues about the crisis that we have in affordable housing in Portland and throughout the state. What I do want to say is that the challenges that we face in addressing these problems require us to use a broad array of tools and strategies, and the bills that you have before you this morning are wonderful complements to that toolbox that we use on a daily basis to address the problems of affordable housing. You're looking at bills today that speak to the lender's tax credit, a program that we utilize fully, a program which is typically oversubscribed at the state level, so the extension and the expansion of that program would be a valuable resource for Portland. The ability to use tax abatements as a stimulation for new affordable housing and as an incentive to keep currently affordable housing in the affordable housing stock rather than transitioning to market rate. New resources in the form of the recording fee, new resources in the form of match savings accounts, so money coming from the intended beneficiaries themselves, and support for the donation of tax foreclosed properties and the ability to use that as a resource, again, to address this challenge of affordable housing. Portland supports all of the bills that you're dealing with today, and we are glad to see this continuing set of resources and programs be available to address the problems of our community. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Thank you very much. And Peter Grunfossen.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and committee. Thank you for having this hearing today. We appreciate it greatly. My name is Peter Grunfossen. I represent the Association of Oregon Housing Authorities, and I've been before this committee on other occasions talking about the vast need for assistance in the affordable housing area. And I'm very pleased to see this cluster of bills before the committee this morning. The association my association supports all of them, but I want to speak particularly to the to 3207 with its intended amendments. 3207 is the one that provides the document fee that's been addressed, and I want to say that today is a red letter day because you had before you, and I do want to put a very fine point on it. You've had before you this morning the representatives from the State Association of Realtors and from the Oregon Building Industry Association saying that this would be an important bill as far as their organizations are concerned. And I'm here to tell you that in the history of fighting the affordable housing fight, these occurrences are very rare. But what they were saying is that the situation has gotten so bad in terms of the housing crisis that their organizations are willing to step up and say, yes, we've got to contribute this additional money. There's no silver bullet in this business of finding answers to poverty and to the crisis in low-income affordable housing in the state. There's no silver bullet. This package of bills will go a long way to help. There are some other things out there, some other ideas out in the legislature that you'll be hearing about as the session moves along. But this package is of high, high importance, and I urge passage of each and every one of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter, and thanks for pointing out the notable nature of that testimony.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
As I did not comment on it at the time, I did note their willingness to step forward and to be a part of this particular solution package. And I really appreciate that in them and all of the people who've come forward this morning. But
right.
We have an opportunity here to actually move some things of help.
I want to thank everyone who spoke and testified and those who came down. You did a great job of
making
your testimony brief. I should have Representative Shetterly give those instructions every day, I guess.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I just wish they worked as well in my judiciary committee as they appeared to work down here.
They were kind of trade. I also want to thank Representative Merkley and the Housing Subcommittee for the work that they put in on these. I would request that they consider the testimony that we've heard today, evaluate the suggestions for just a couple of amendments, and perhaps bring those back, or depending on what the judgment of the subcommittee is, and we'll schedule these bills for a work session in the near future.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone, and we have 10:30 floor. Tomorrow, we're at 8:15, so please mark your calendars. Thank you. We're adjourned.